Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello and welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is the Leader's Toolbox with Fire Chief Rich Gassaway. My name is Peter Matthews. I'm an editor here at Firehouse, and I would like to thank you for joining us for today's show. Thank you for the feedback on the first show, which debuted in December. If anybody has any feedback, questions, or comments, please drop us an email at podcasts@firehouse.com. Rich, thank you for joining us today, and Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Happy holidays to everybody.
One of the questions we have, actually, is a home run for the new year. You know, there's a bunch of new fire chiefs out there. Departments who have to report to their town or city government may have some new mayors. And the question here is the importance of a mission statement. How important is it to have one for your department? And what's the best way to go about it? And what are some of the things that should be in there?
Okay. Well, the purpose of the mission statement is to give the department direction, to give it meaning, to get everybody on the same page as to where we are, what we represent, who we serve. And what I have found, Pete, as I travel about and talk with folks, is I ask the question in the classroom. Usually a third of the people raise their hand that they have a mission statement, and the other two-thirds don't. And then of the third who have a mission statement, I ask any of them who would like to share it to stand up and tell the group what their mission statement is. And I usually get some pretty blank stares, or looking down at the floor, or shuffling in their seats because they don't know it. And I guess as bad as not having one is having one and not knowing what it is. It's probably not worth having if you don't know it. So the first part of this is to discuss why have a mission statement. Well, I like to use analogies when I talk with folks, and not having a mission statement is the same as me gathering up a group of people and saying, hey everybody, we're going to go on vacation next week. Oh, hey, good, sounds great. Where are we going? Well, I don't know. Okay. Should we bring warm clothes or cold clothes? I don't really know. All right. How much money are we going to need? Are we going to be, you know, camping out in the woods? We don't need a whole lot of money? Or are we going to be in, you know, a touristy area that we're going to be doing a lot of, seeing a lot of attractions and things? I don't really know. Okay. Are we going to take a car, a plane, a bus, a train, bicycle, or a motorcycle? I don't really know. Well, how excited are those folks going to be to go on vacation with me with all these unknowns? Probably not very excited. At least not as much as excitement as when it first started, when I said, hey, let's go somewhere, you know, and have some fun. And when you lack a mission statement, essentially what you're saying to the organization is, follow me, but in a direction that I can't really tell you what it is and where we're going and how long it'll take to get there and what we're going to do along the way, and it starts to be confusing. So a mission statement is a statement of why do we exist as an organization? What is our purpose? Who are we here to serve? And the process in which to develop the mission statement is one that involves the entire organization. In other words, if there's a chief out there who is listening to the podcast and says, okay, I finally get it, and I buy into what Rich is saying, and our organization needs a mission statement, and I'm going to write one this afternoon and put it out to everybody by the weekend. That's not going to work because there needs to be some buy-in. The mission statement should reflect the input of the entire organization. There should be folks who get a chance to say what they think the organization represents, and not merely a dictate from the chief of the department. So if you're thinking about creating a mission statement, one of the very first and most important concepts is to involve a lot of people in the process. Post it as a draft. Ask for input and feedback. Post another draft after that. Ask for input and feedback. And don't expect that at the beginning that everybody's going to be on the same page. It's kind of a good exercise is to bring all your people in a room, sit them down, give them a piece of paper, and say, why do you think we exist as a department? And let them all write something down, and then have them start calling it out and comparing what people say. Hopefully, there is some commonality. Hopefully, you hear things like to protect lives and property, to serve our community, to make a difference in people's lives, or whatever it would be. You'd hope that there'd be some commonality, and then you might see that there'd be some other things in there that might more represent individuals' personal missions for why they're on the fire department and not the global mission. So you take those things and kind of put them together in a statement that represents who we are. And that gives our organization some vision. And that vision then helps give us direction. And if we don't have vision, imagine a person who is stricken of their vision trying to go somewhere. They are either following along, attached to someone who would lead them. If you don't have vision, you can follow blindly someone else's lead. Or if you were left in a room with no one to give you any guidance and no other means, you might just walk in circles, or you might just stand still, because you're not sure where you're at or where to go. And that's what happens organizationally when there is no vision. People will follow a leader blindly if they believe and trust in that leader, or they'll walk in circles, or they'll stand still. Or even the worst and probably most dangerous of all is they'll go in whatever direction they want to go in, regardless of the direction that the leader is trying to lead the organization in. So the mission statement is a way for the leader to say, hey, everyone, this is what we've all decided is the most important components of what we do. And from that, we're going to build now some goals to determine how we accomplish this stuff. And I would encourage those who are out there thinking about developing a mission statement, in addition to involving everyone, is to keep the mission statement short and sweet. And, well, how short and how sweet? Well, I've seen mission statements as short as 5 or 6 words, and I've seen some good ones that are 1 or 2 sentences. What I have seen that is a little discontenting are mission statements that are a page long. And a mission statement should be the kind of thing that if I say, what is your mission statement, they should be able to say it in one breath. If they can't say it in one breath, then they're probably not going to memorize it, and they're probably not going to internalize it. If it's the kind of thing that you have to study over and over and over again and then still not able to remember it, then it's probably too long. So the challenge to those developing a mission statement is involve everyone in a process to create a single sentence or 2-sentence statement about why we exist as a fire department. How does that help us later on? Well, it helps us when we're trying to make presentations to our elected officials and what we're trying to accomplish as a fire department. It's nice to have a mission statement that says we're trying to do these things for the community that is consistent with our mission as a department. And you know, that mission would be a good thing to have the council's involvement in, their blessing, their approval of it, so that they are on board with you know, what the organization's stated purpose is, and they'll probably more likely to support the organization politically and financially if they're on board with what the mission is. And then once we have the mission, we use it to help us to develop some goals for how we're going to get to where it is that we're going. And one of the things that I've noticed, Pete, is that organizations that have people in them that are struggling to make their requirements, or they're struggling with the changes in the organization, I sometimes ask, well, do you have a mission statement for your organization? Yes or no is the answer. But the what is most common follow-up for me is, do you think the person who's struggling is on board with the mission? In other words, do they know it? Are they supporting it? Are they serving your organization because they're in tune with what the mission of the organization is? Or do you think they've lost touch with why the fire department exists and why maybe they joined in the first place? And inevitably, the response that I get is, oh, no, they're definitely have lost touch or lost interest, or, you know, fallen away from the organization. And I said, well, there's where the mission statement would help you out. It would help to bring them back in. It'd bring it, you know, bring them back to the grounded reality of why are we here. We're not here to serve our individual selfish needs and desires. We're here for a greater purpose. And most of us, I'd like to think, have joined because we were drawn to the need of serving for a greater purpose, our fellow humankind. And along the way, some people get out of focus. You know, it's just kind of like a movie camera. You know, sometimes it's out of focus, and you need to just adjust the focus key a little bit so that the vision comes into clarity. And sometimes folks, when they're out of focus and they're vision is a little blurred, having a mission statement and bringing them back to the basic reason we exist as a department kind of brings them back into focus as to why they're here and what purpose they're supposed to be serving. And the mission statement is a good tool to help everyone keep the most important thing right up front. You know, as Stephen Covey would say, first things first. And, you know, the first thing that's first in the fire department is, why do we exist? You know, we're here to serve the community. And we're here for a lot of reasons. You know, if you're a career firefighter, you know, part of the reason you have the job is to you know, provide a living for your family. And that's important, too. But that's not the first and foremost and entire reason for the existence of the fire department. And some folks sometimes lose their vision. It gets blurred as to the real reason that they're on the fire department. And these are the kind of folks that you find complaining about arbitrary things. You know, oh, we're doing this or we're doing that, or the, you know, administration's doing this or doing that. And a mission statement's a good way to say, well, let's come back to, you know, let's get back our feet back on the ground as to the basic reason why we're here. And that is, you know, hopefully, to serve the customer first and foremost. And then from that, you build goals. And those goals are things you put in writing that are measurable and achievable, that along the way helps us have some successes that we can celebrate. And one of the things I ask folks is, well, do you celebrate success when your department has successes? I hear you telling me a lot about your issues and your troubles. What do you do to celebrate your successes? And what I have found out is a lot of departments don't know what success looks like. You know, they wouldn't. They're so busy trying to trudge along each and every day, that when they're all along the way, when they're having these successes, they don't pause to reflect and say, hey, we had a success here. We passed a milestone. We accomplished something that is a big deal to our mission. You know, it was one of our major goals. And let's pause and celebrate and enjoy some of the success that we've had. And so those goals that support the mission give you incremental steps for stating in writing what we want to do, and in a way that's achievable. And I would ask the folks who set out to do this is to make sure that those goals are, you know, realistic and attainable and within your budget means and within the time constraints of your department. Coming back to my analogy of the, hey, let's go on a trip together, if I set a goal that we were going to go from the East Coast to the West Coast by car in one day, that's not realistic. And if we try to do it, there's going to be a whole lot of frustration and a whole lot of aggravation, and we might even get in a wreck and get hurt along the way. So when you go to set these goals out, you know, be conscientious of the constraints that you have to deal with, people's time, budgets, physical resources that you have available to you, other demands that you have, and make those goals such that a person can accomplish them. And then when they do, then celebrate those successes. I think people are much more willing to follow the direction of an organization and to follow a leader if they know where they're going. You know, it's like my vacation example. If I had good answers for all those questions that were being asked of me, I might have a group of people who were much more excited about taking the trip if I were able to present it in such a way that it appears that it's going to be an enjoyable journey. You know, that the unknowns are known, you know, and you won't end up on the beach with your winter coat frustrated because you thought we were going north and we ended up going south. Or you won't end up, you know, at a touristy place with no money in your pocket because you thought we were going to go on a canoe trip into the wilderness and wouldn't need a lot of money. So the more we can reveal about the direction of our organization, the more likely we are have folks buy into it. Coming into January, a great time. You know, the new year and people make resolutions and you know, put away old habits and try to start new ones, and it'd be just a great time in January to set the organization down and say, let's get back in focus. If we have a mission statement, let's revisit it. Is it current? Is it accurate? Is it too long? Do people know what it is? Let's get in touch with it. If we don't have one, let's create one. If we do have one, let's all commit to getting reacquainted with it and re-internalizing the mission so that we're all back in starting the new year with a very clear vision, a very sharp vision about where we're going organizationally.
Rich, what is the mission statement for your department?
Well, I didn't expect you that you were going to ask me that.
I'm trying to find it on the website right now, and I can't find
yeah.
it.
Oh, it's there. It's there, right on our homepage. It's to continually strive for the prevention of fires, injuries, and accidents while upholding high standards for the quality of services that we provide to our citizens, our businesses, and our visitors. So it's one sentence, maybe 25 words or so, but it just kind of succinctly says that we're focused first and foremost on prevention, and then when we do have to go to injuries and accidents and fires, that we want to give folks the best possible service that we can, but to three constituency groups: our residents, our visitors, and our businesses. And that's essentially the mission. Rather short and rather sweet. We have them on banners that we have posted up in each of our fire stations. I think it's important to be in touch with it. I mean, I'd like to say that I practice what I preach, and the departments that I have found that are the most focused are the ones who have a good mission statement, and their people are in tune with it. You know, they're playing from that sheet of music.
Okay, and this is something too. I guess you could probably include like on the department letterhead, city or fire department newsletters, et cetera, so that people know what you're there for. You know, they can call 911 or your local emergency number, but it just gets it out there and it gets it into the people's heads.
Right. Now, you made me go to my website there just to check it. When you go to our website now, we have the Christmas tree fire to kind of educate people about fire safety. But if you click and go to the main page of our website, the mission statement's right on the home page of the fire department's website. And we have it on our business cards as well. So if we give, you know, a business card to somebody in the community, you know, they're able to see what we... the reason we exist, what gives us purpose, and so that's my thoughts on the mission statement.
All right, and I guess how do you get the members to you know keep this in their mind? I guess it could be on a test question when the member first joins, but you know, if you do go around and ask your members about it, is it something that they will recall pretty quickly, or, I mean, how do you feel it's best for them to keep it in their mind?
Well, you know, I try not to, you know, just be like so aggressive that I'm like in their face with it. We have them on banners in the apparatus bay at each of our stations. We have it on our city website homepage. We have it on our internal fire department intranet website homepage. We have it on our. Yeah, and then periodically I'll ask folks what's the mission statement. We ran a contest here recently. We have something called a challenge coin, where people can do things that are, if they're just, you know, a little bit above and beyond or something exceptional, treated a customer an extra special way, they can earn a challenge coin, which has our patch on it. It's on the website, too, I think. But we had a contest that said if you come to the chief's office and recite the mission statement, you earn a challenge coin. And not everybody did it, but we had a substantial number of folks either come to my office or catch me at a drill or a meeting and say, I'm ready to recite the mission statement. And much to their chagrin, if it wasn't precisely correct, they didn't earn the coin. And they said, well, it's something like, and then they didn't get it right, I'd say, well, I'm not looking for the something like. I'm looking for the exact mission statement. So go ahead and rehearse it again. You know, I'll be here all night, and come back and say it again. You can practice. There's no limit to how many times you can try to get it right. But I want to know that when you earn the coin, that you've got it right, that you understand it. And it took some folks several times trying. I think every organization has to continually strive to keep their focus, my organization as well, to keep focused on what's really, really important. And where I most use it is for people that I have that I notice are getting out of focus, and I use it to help get them back into focus. You know, what's the mission statement? I don't know. Okay, well, here's a business card. Flip it over and read it out loud. And they read it out loud. I say, now, is your existence here on the department fulfilling the mission statement, or is it fulfilling a personal mission that you have put above the mission of the department? And most often, it's they've let some personal issue. Pull them out of focus, and I use it to help, kind of guide them back on track.
All right, good. Okay, and also on the homepage this week, we'll have the poll question as does your department have a mission statement, yes or no? So please check the Firehouse poll for this week at the bottom of the homepage and check off whether or not your department does have one. We'll be right back here on Radio at Firehouse. Be right back. Thank you.
Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. Again, if you have any questions, comments, feedback, or suggestions, please drop us an email at podcasts@firehouse.com. We'll break back into the second part with a question about training, Rich. And this is from a captain. It says, I'm a new captain and now training officer in a fairly busy volunteer fire department. We run about 1,200 calls a year. We have classes scheduled each week with less than 50% attendance at both of the classes. The options I have, start attending training where you are no longer an active member, has met resistance from the fire chief. He fears that the number of members will dwindle if that's the option that people choose. Do you have any suggestions as a for the new training officer and then for the new captain as well to make sure that he doesn't offend anybody but at the same time gets the important training issues out there?
Sure. Well, I the problem that the captain is describing is, if I had to guess, is something that has evolved over time. Now, it might be a different scenario, and I might be giving the wrong advice if this training attendance just dwindled suddenly, then you'd have to look at another reason. But I'm going to assume this is something that's happened over time. And the low training attendance is not the problem. It is a symptom to the problem. There's some other problem there that's causing folks to not attend training. It's kind of like having a headache, you know, and say, my head hurts. Well, that's not the problem. That's the symptom. There's something else going on inside your noggin that's causing the headache. Or something else going on inside this organization that's causing the low training attendance. So what is it? How do we find out what it is? And how do we fix it? Well, the shortest route to finding out what the problem is to ask people, why aren't you coming to drill? Why aren't you coming and participating in driller training and hear what they have to say? Now, if you think that you have the kind of folks in the organization who would be forthright with you and give you honest answers, just go ask them directly one-on-one. If not, then maybe conduct an anonymous survey where people might not feel as threatened to you know, give their feedback if people didn't know who they were. The bottom line is we got to get to the root of the problem and figure out why folks aren't coming to training. Or ask people, do you know why other folks aren't coming to training? Just something to try to get the subject out there to get some dialogue going as to what it is that is keeping people to from coming to training. Now, this is where I have to go out on the ledge a little bit, because without actually knowing the response to what that question is, I'm only now speculating as to what some of the problems are as to why people aren't coming to training. So I'll kind of build on a few pieces of feedback that I've been given from folks in other departments who've had these problems. One of the things that you might hear is that drills are a waste of time. Okay, why? Why are they a waste of time? When you start to break that down, you find out things like, well, they're not organized, or they're poorly taught, or the topics aren't interesting, or we do the same thing every week, or we're drilling on all the basic stuff that we already know, and it's never anything new. So, you know, now we're starting to flesh out. Another one might be the instructor is really poor. You know, they're just not good in the classroom, or they don't know what they're talking about, and it's obvious to us. Or maybe they act like they know what they're talking about, and that's obvious to us too. So you start to flesh out some of these reasons for why people aren't coming to training. So when you get the reasons, then you can start to address the real problem to get some solutions. For example, drills are unorganized. Okay, well, we can figure that one out. We can figure out a way to get drills more organized. We can download some drills online, and there's some wonderful websites. Firefighter Close Calls has some great drills on that website. Download some drills so that and prepare for it in advance. So if you need two or three different pieces of equipment, that you have that equipment there with the start of drill, so you're not spending the first half hour of the drill trying to organize and gather up what you need to conduct the drill. The drill's ready to go right from the beginning. It's poorly taught. Well, again, assign the topics to the drill instructors far enough in advance that they can prepare themselves to teach the drill. You know, I had somebody say, so-and-so taught a really bad drill. So I went to the person and said, how'd you think drill went? Oh, it went terrible. Well, why'd it go so bad? Because I only found out that morning that I had to teach that night. And I didn't have time to prepare, but I threw something together and did my best. Well, it showed to everybody that you weren't prepared, and was it that person's fault that they were asked that morning to teach a drill that night? Or, were they kind of the savior who stepped up and did the last-minute drill? But there's really no reason on a drill. If you know your department's drilling twice a week and you're going to drill twice a week every week of the year, there's no reason that you can't have a drill schedule that takes you out for an entire year. So you could tell folks, I need you to teach, ladders or extinguishers or pulling hose lines or SCBA maze 6 months from now, 8 months from now, 10 months from now, and get that information out there so the folks who are going to teach it have time to prepare themselves. And then give them some resources. Give them some drill outlines, some reference materials, a Firefighter One manual that they can use to make their outline for the drill. Uninteresting topics. Well, look at the drills that you're conducting. Are they the kind of drills that people want to attend? And you say, well, I can't always teach them what they want to attend, and that's true. But if you're having your fourth drill this year on how to throw a ladder, you probably need to set that aside for a while and drill on something else that helps them learn and grow. People want to come to training when they feel like they're going to be challenged to learn something new and to grow a greater experience in their position. And if they come to drill every week and it's the basic stuff that they feel they already know, they're not going to be as excited about participating. So mix it up and throw in some new stuff with some old stuff. If you got to teach something that you think the folks know, find a way to challenge them with a new twist to an old topic, and try to keep their interest going that way. Now, this person had said, Pete, that the option that they could think of was to put into place an or else policy. And I mean by or else policy, come to drill or suffer consequence. And that certainly is one way to get a drill attendance up, although when you get drill attendance up, don't be surprised that those people who come to drill aren't exactly happy to be there, because they're not there because they want to be there. They're there because they have to be there, because you now have a policy that says come to drill or else you have a consequence. I would challenge this training officer and others to find a way to have people want to come to training and want to participate. When you're looking at motivation runs really just two spectrums: fear motivation and desire motivation. Fear motivation is doing the things because I'm afraid of the consequence of what's going to happen that if I don't do it. Desire motivation says I'm doing something because I want to do it. There's some reward there. I get some benefit. I feel good as a result of doing it. And I'm coming because I want to participate and be a smarter firefighter. So if you look at your drill attendance and find out those reasons that people aren't coming, why they've lost their interest, try to get the program to focus on creating a desire to want to come back into the process of coming to regular training. So ask the folks two things. One, why aren't you coming to training? And two, when they say whatever that is, ask, how can we fix it? What are your ideas about how we can make training better? And then incorporate some of those people's ideas. And you might find people saying, wow, they really listened to me. You know, I gave them this idea, and they really, you know, took it and made some changes. And you might even find some common themes as you start to ask people. You know, there's quite a, I don't know the size of this department, 50%. You know, is that 50% of 20 people or 50% of 100 people? You know, it could vary, but if you don't have 5 people come in to drill, that's a little different than if you don't have 25 or 30 people come in to drill. You might find some common themes as you start to ask folks why they're not coming. But I would try to find a way to appeal to their desire and to create some rewards for training versus creating punishment. You know, punishment is unpleasant, and it's probably going to be short-term versus creating some kind of reward that creates desire, that makes people want to come to drill. You know, I've seen charts that folks put up on the wall for drill attendance, and every time somebody attends a drill, they get a check mark or a decal of a Maltese cross put on the chart, just something to, you know, give them some recognition for being an active participant. And you'd say, well, you know, that's third grade stuff. Well, you know what? there's a lot of things that teachers do in the third grade to motivate kids that we can learn about when it comes to motivating adults. Motivation is motivation, and people, just like kids want to be rewarded and recognized, so do adults. They want to be rewarded and recognized. And I think that when people come to drill, not only make it an enjoyable experience, meaning that it's well organized, it's well presented, that they're being challenged to learn something, but make sure you tell them thanks too. You know, thanks for coming. Or even better, involve those folks who think they already know everything, and chances are they don't. But we do have some folks that have been on the department for a number of years that do know a lot of stuff. Involve them in helping to teach the drill. So let them bring their experience into the classroom instead of sitting in the back with their arms folded saying, I already know all this stuff. Put them in a position to help you teach that. And if they're not good in front of the classroom, let them help with the hands-on stuff. Or you know, let them help coach folks as they're practicing things. But get people involved, and I would try to avoid the creation of a policy that just says attend drill or else. Chances are, it's only going to be a short-term solution, and then you're going to end up dealing with a bunch of disciplinary problems because folks aren't attending the drill. Now, you said that I made a note here when you were asking the question that they run about 1,200 calls. Just a quick calculation on my calculator tells me that's about 3 1/3 calls a day. It could be, and you'll know this as you ask the folks, it could be they're just being overworked. You know, if you're answering 3 1/3 calls a day and you're a small department, say, you know, 30 members, and everyone's coming from home to answer every call, they're busy. They're given a lot of time to the fire department to answer calls and to get them to come back in again, away from their family and other things that they're doing for a training, in addition to answering 3 1/3 calls a day, might just be overextending them in what they can give. Now, you know, this fleshes out when you ask them, you know, why they're not attending. But, you know, one of the problems could be they're just giving everything they can to the department just to see the call load being answered. And if that's the case, then I think the department has an opportunity to look at how they're handling their calls to see if there is another way to divvy out the call volume so that no one group of folks are having to do too much work. For example, maybe certain days you have people on call you know, certain people are on call for Monday and certain people are on call for Tuesday, so that I only have to now worry about answering the calls on Tuesday. I don't have to worry about Monday and Wednesday and Thursday's call. And maybe everybody's on call on the weekends because it's just the time where, you know, people come and go. So, you know, weekends is everybody come if you're available. However you want to set it up, divvy out. If you find out that call volume is the problem and people are just saying, I'm just so consumed with having to answer the calls, find a way to lighten that load for them, so that everyone carries a little bit of the load some of the time, and not everyone carries all of the load all of the time. And then you might find that they have more time than to give to other things like training. You know, it doesn't say, again, in the question whether we're dealing with a department that's entirely volunteer or a combination or completely career. You know, those different designs bring some different dynamics into play. It sounds to me like it was a predominantly volunteer department, so I would encourage them to get to the root of the problem, find out what's the reason that people aren't coming to training, get beyond the symptoms and actually get to the cause of the problem. And then this captain has a challenge to find a way to make training enjoyable again. And I would encourage this captain to also test the waters with the chief to try to figure out how important it is to the chief for people to attend training. In other words, this captain might say, I'm really frustrated by this problem. And he might be working for a chief who says, I don't see it as that big a deal. Well, this captain's going to find himself between a rock and a hard place as he goes about trying to create change that isn't supported from above him. And that's a tough thing to do. So one of the early things he might want to do is have a sit-down with the chief and say, training is less than 50%, the two drills a week. How do you feel about that? And the chief hopefully would say, well, I don't like that at all. I think that our folks need to be attending training and training regularly and learning and developing, and it's important to the success, and it helps us achieve our mission. And with that support, then the captain has the latitude in which to go out and gather this information, get to the root of the problem, and bring forth some solutions. The chief doesn't support a more vigorous or vibrant training program, this captain might find himself having to do the best that he can with less than 50% attendance, or find a way to influence the chief into changing his position about increasing the priority that that training would have.
What if you do meet resistance from the chief of department? You know, they don't want to give you the funding, or they don't want to allow, you know, a training on the night of a meeting, or, you know, some other event that's going on. How do you get that importance, or the you know, the fact that it is so important and necessary to get the training, the necessary training done at the different time, or even, you know, the cost for it, the cost of the training?
Yeah. Well, you know, cost is certainly a factor, and I would hope that a fire department would find a way to make training a priority. Boy, if we're gonna serve our customer, and we're gonna do it in a way that we can all be go home safely at the end of each call, then we have to have some prioritization toward making sure that our folks know how to do their job well. If a chief is resistant to that, and let's assume that maybe the department has officers' meetings, maybe they do, maybe they don't, but maybe this training captain could appeal to some of his or her peers and try to gain some momentum by getting some support from other officers in the department, who then might collectively try to influence the chief. Now, the chief's out there probably saying, you're telling them to gang up on us. It's not necessarily my message, but sometimes as chiefs, and you know, I are one, so I'm speaking, you know, about myself as well. Sometimes we have a lot of things on our mind and a lot of priorities, and when somebody comes to us with an idea, it doesn't rise to the top of our priority list. So if that captain keeps approaching the chief, gets a few other folks to help, you know, start planting some seeds with the chief, having some discussions at officers' meetings, and the chief starts to hear the message again and again and again that we need to train as a department, then maybe it'll get through to him. In the end, I think so much of an organization's success depends upon the support of the chief and the officer's corps to bring about successful change within a department. And if that chief is dug in and says, well, we're not training anymore, and we're not putting any more money toward training. And I don't know, Pete, that the problem is necessarily funding here, because, you know, it's two sessions a week. I think that's a pretty good drill schedule for a part-time department to even have two drills a week. So, you know, if they've got the budget to have two drills a week, and just not having the attendance, then it might be to, you know, doing things to try to get the attendance up. And drills don't have to be expensive endeavors, as far as, you know, your biggest expense, if you pay your folks, would be your payroll for a drill. You don't have to do things that are costly in the way of expendable materials and stuff. There's a lot of drills you can do right in the station. You don't even have to go out on the street and roll the wheels of the truck to do it. There's a lot of things that you can do to make your department better and smarter and safer that are low cost. So, boy, I tell you, some folks will disagree with me, but I think that playing the we just can't afford to drill because we don't have the budget to be able to do training, I think that's a cop-out. You've in that case, you've taken your eye off the ball. You've taken your eye off one of the most important things, and that is being ready to do your job when you have to, and doing it safely. Setting aside all the issues that are going to be caused, say if you're in an OSHA state and you have a firefighter injury on a fire ground that prompts an OSHA inquiry, and they come in and say, well, let's see your training records. Show me where you trained firefighter Smith on how to do this thing that he or she was doing when they got hurt. Well, we never actually taught them how to do that. So you had a firefighter doing something that you didn't train them how to do, and they got hurt doing it. That's not the kind of thing that they're going to take real kindly to. So, you know, even if you have to appeal to the chief on the grounds of our liability, maybe you have to play that card. You know, chief, our organization could really take a hit here if we had a firefighter injured fighting a house fire, and we haven't trained him on how to wear turnout gear and a self-contained breathing apparatus. We don't want to do that. That's be a, you know, appeal to your city attorney and see if they can have some influence. But I think, you know, using we can't afford to train is a cop out, and if you're that underprivileged as a department, then maybe you should contract your fire protection to a community that's nearby that can't afford to train. So at least when the need to have the services is called for, you'll get well trained firefighters that aren't going to get themselves or others hurt.
All right, very good. We can wrap up this edition of the Leader's Toolbox here on Radio at Firehouse. Rich, again, thank you very much for the great words of wisdom and for sharing with us what you've learned over the last 20-plus years in the fire service. And again, thank you to everybody for listening to the show. Check the bottom of the homepage for the Firehouse poll to tell us whether or not you have a mission statement for your department. And if you have any questions or suggestions for upcoming shows, please drop us an email at podcasts@firehouse.com. Thank you, Rich, and thank you all for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Pete.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.